of discussing this blatantly false theorem. But you know, we will eventually fix it. It will become a true theorem. And also, as of Monday, we know what theorem it is. It's the theorem that there exists a universal finite type invariant. So basically, it's the construction of all finite type invariants at once. But I mean, we still don't know exactly the connection, but you know, we still have half a semester or more. But anyway, so here's how the theorem goes. So if you have a knot gamma, and in fact the same can be done for lings, but I mean, well, let's do knots first. Then I define z minus 1 of gamma. So you see z0 of gamma will be almost right, and will be renormalized later to be right. But then z minus 1 is even a preliminary. It's the sum over all diagrams that look like that. They have a circle on the outside, and then a trivalent graph in the inside, and I think they should be connected. They should be connected, sorry, I don't just think. Then, you, for each such diagram, you take this diagram itself as a formal variable. So the answer is in a vector space generated by diagrams, as we expect in the case of, as we have learned to expect on Mondays. It's not the same vector space of diagrams, but you know, that will be fixed later. Divide by some combinatorial factor, later there may be more. And the interesting part is that we integrate over the configuration space of placing this diagram in R3 and on the knot, which means, so if the diagram is, for example, this one, it means that you find a place in R3 for each of the internal vertices and a place on the knot for each of the skeleton vertices, so that the order is preserved. So such a placement would be here, as shown here. And then you look at the space of all such placements. That's this configuration space. And it is a subset of S1 raised to the power, the singular vertices of D, sorry, the skeleton vertices of D, cross R3 raised to the power the internal vertices of D, right? This is clear from the picture. And okay, now on that space, there is a certain large differential form. The differential form is the product over all edges of the diagram of, so for each edge of the diagram, you have the direction of site map into S2. This is the usual phi e, map phi e, and then you pull back from S2 the volume form of S2. You get a two form for each edge, you wedge all of them together, and you get something that can be integrated here. If we count dimensions, we find that this is right. So the space in our, in the case of this diagram, is 3 plus 3 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 dimensional, meaning 10, and we're integrating the wedge product of 5 two forms, so it's a 10 form. Good. We also said that for this to make sense, we have to order the skeleton vertices at least up to an even permutation, and order the internal vertices, otherwise the space over, again, up to an even permutation, otherwise the space here is not, we don't know how to orient it, and we must have an orientation. And also, all edges, so really, I mean, these should be somehow numbered, 1, 2, 3, but the numbering is up to a permutation. And also the internal ones should be numbered. But also, when you pull back a volume form, well, the direction of site and the inverse direction of site differ by an antipode, and the antipode reverses sign. So all internal edges must be oriented, but only up to, if you flip the orientation, you can just replace, the thing changes by a minus sign. There is a handout to pick up on the corner. Also, You see, when I take this wedge product, I have to order the edges, don't I? No. Because you see, these are actually all, even. These forms are all two forms, and two forms commute. So I actually don't need an ordering of the edges for this to make sense. Okay. Well, there will be a lot to say about it, you know, and we will. But the first thing to say is that this converges. And it's not at all obvious. So it can fail to converge for several reasons. One reason is that when two points in the configuration space approach each other, the map, the direction of sight map, direction of view map, becomes singular. So, the integral might diverge. And also, the integration domain is non-compact. So the S1 part is more or less compact, well, it's compact, but the R3 part has, the physicist will call it infrared divergences, sort of, it goes far to infinity, okay? As opposed to what the physicist, when two points come too close to each other, the physicist will call it ultraviolet divergences. Anyway, both occur here, so we need to manage them. The trick will be to replace this space by a compact space on which this form is still well defined. And in which the old space is dense, so is basically almost everything. So it being almost everything means that we will not change the integral, and the fact that it's compact means that it's integrable, means that integration theory works. So we want to compactify this space in such a way so as that the direction of view map will still make sense. Okay? So let me start with the idea and then start writing definitions. And, the result is sort of kind of a bit hellish, but with some elegance in it, actually. So here's the idea. In fact, I'll do something slightly more general, and I will only need the further generality extremely lightly. But also, it doesn't cost me anything, so I may as well. Okay? So, if M is a D-manifold, so a D-dimensional manifold, and A is a finite set, I guess with cardinality, the absolute value of A. Well, first of all, the space that I want to compactify, the pre-compactified space, the open configuration space, I will call it C up O. This is not zero, this is O. It's O for open. I will call it C up O sub A of M. So it's the space of putting A points in M. And by definition, it will be the collection of all injections P going from A to M. So it's just cardinality of A points in M, but labeled by the elements of A. Okay? And this is the space I want to compactify. And the dimension, just to keep track of things, the dimension of this space is equal to the number of points times the dimension of the space. Okay? It is a manifold, but it's an open manifold. It's not a compact manifold. Okay. Now, let me first of all, maybe sketch the idea or draw the idea. Do I have enough room here? I guess. So here is M. Okay? And here is a number of points in M. Okay? The issue is that the non-compactness comes from the fact, well, I mean, there is one non-compactness that comes from the fact that M itself might be non-compact, okay? But let's ignore this for a minute. Let's deal with it later. But the non-compactness comes from the fact that two points may coincide. But in fact, also three points may coincide. So if I call this point one, point two, then I may have a situation where points 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 all come together, all converge to the same point. Now, I could add just one point to the space and call it 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And if you asked me, where is 6, I would tell you it's here. But then the direction map between 3 and 6 will not be well defined. Okay? Because it will be in the same place. So the idea is to add to think of it as a kind of wide point, perhaps. A point that has internal structure. And the internal structure is, well, sort of you can put a magnifying glass. And when you look in with a magnifying glass, the magnifying glass tells you that, I mean, when you look for afar, all points are in the same place. But when you look with the magnifying glass, you find that 3 is here, 4 is here, and 5 is here. 3, 4, and 5. But you see, even when you look under the magnifying glass, then the directions are all well-defined between these. But even when you look in the magnifying glass, it might be that two points will want to be in the same place, right? After all, what I will put in the magnifying glass will be the configuration space of 5 points in a disk. Well, not quite a disk, I will fix this later. But 5 points in the domain of the magnifying glass. And then they would need to be different in themselves. And again, that's non-compact. So again, I may have points coinciding. So I will need to do it recursively. So I may have to think of a wide point within the magnifying glass. And within the magnifying glass, I would have to, so this point will be the point 6, 7. And within the magnifying glass, I will have to declare that 6 is here and 7 is here. Okay? But this is where it stops. Actually, no, let's make 6 here and 7 here. But this is where it actually stops. Because when I have two points, I care about the directions between them, not about the scale. So really the innermost magnifying glass or this thing here should be the configuration space or the open configuration space of two points inside, well, not a disk, but a vector space that corresponds to whatever I will see here. But this one I can mod out by translations, sort of where I put 6 and 7, I only care about the relative position. So translations and dilations, and now this is a compact space.
Sorry, we're looking at injections, right? So why you have like points coinciding?
because I'm trying to look at the closure of injections. The space of injections is open, I mean, is non-compact. And I'm trying to see what do I have to add to this space to make it compact. So, well, of course I can add one point. That would be the so-called, you know, one-point compactification, right? But if I add one point to make it compact, then I will lose the direction maps. Okay?
Probably sort of singular, right?
What?
It's probably singular.
And it will be hugely singular. You know, I could, you know, use the Stoncheck compactification if anybody had ever heard of it. But if you know anything about it, you don't want to use it in any context in which at the end you might actually want to prove a real theorem. Okay? So, forget Stoncheck. That was a joke, okay? You know, here you go. Here's a mathematical joke. Use the Stoncheck compactification. But anyway, but what I want to do is I want to sort of add stuff to the place, to the space, that will correspond to some subset of the points coinciding. Because this is sort of, that's why the non-compactness occurs, because you know, you may have a number of points coming closer and closer and closer to each other, and then the limit of that is not there. So I have to add a limiting point. Okay? But so the limiting should look like a point which kind of says where all of these points lie together, along with a magnifying glass inside of which you see how the points relate to each other. Okay? So this is the idea. Okay? And of course, I still have to deal with the infrared divergences, the infrared non-compactness, but we will do it later. Okay? So, implementation. So, will it fit here? No, let's use a new blackboard. So, implementation. Okay. So, I will define the compactified space, configuration space of A points inside a manifold M. So in fact, this is this is the default thing, okay? Over there, I've added the superscript open to indicate that it's the initial approximation, whatever. So first of all, I will define it as a set without a topology. And then I will tell you how to topologize it, and in fact, how to manifoldize it. Okay? How to put a smooth structure on it. So the set, as a set, it will be the disjoint union over all partitions of A into a disjoint union of subsets. So I'll call it AI, where I runs from 1 to K. So all partitions of A into K subsets. So you see, I might have had in some limiting process within this space, I might have had not just one cluster, but several cluster of points collapsing. So I need to use all subdivisions. And in fact, some of these AIs might be singletons. So that would just correspond to ordinary points. So I guess I should add all the AIs should be not equal to the empty set. And I think your handout doesn't say that. So that's a mistake in the handout. OK?
For each such subdivision,
also I think in the handout I call the index alpha, so let me keep this notation alpha. So for each such partitioning, each set lies in
some point on the manifold. It's a cluster that lives on some place in the manifold. So for each alpha, I need a point P sub alpha. Okay, so let me write the conditions here. So I want each P sub alpha to be just an ordinary point in the manifold, and I want these points to be distinct. I want the clusters to be separate. So alpha different than beta implies P alpha is different than P beta. You know, when you want to intimidate first year students, you write P alpha equals P beta implies alpha equals beta. Okay, anyway, but you see, for each cluster, I need to know the internal configuration of that cluster. So I need some thing configuration of cluster alpha, and the configuration of cluster alpha should lie inside the compactified configuration space of the set A alpha inside, well, what will you see in the magnifying glass? In the magnifying glass, you will see the tangent space to the manifold at the point corresponding to this cluster. So this is inside the compactified configurations, inside the configuration space inside the tangent to the manifold at the point P alpha. Okay? And here, alpha should go from 1 to k. Okay? However, you see, these points, I only care about them as sort of an abstract configuration. The zero of the manifold is irrelevant. Okay? So I want to mod out by translation and dilations, so I need to not quite take the configuration space, but a new space, CA tilde, which will be the configuration space, modulo dilations and translations. Okay? So now I need a new definition. So, where? So it's a recursive definition. Okay? Where? If V is a vector space and we're looking at the configuration space of a set with one point, then, right, I have to start the induction somewhere, then the tilde configuration space of that inside V is in itself a single point. Okay, so in particular, if any of the A alpha is a singleton, then I just get, you know, then that's a single point, so I just get the placement of the cluster for that point. Otherwise, so I use recursion. So otherwise, CA tilde of V is the same kind of subdivision. So the same kind of direct sum, disjoint union. So it's a union, it's a union over all ways of writing A as a union of non-empty A alphas. So each A alpha is not equal to the empty set. But I also want there to be at least two clusters. Okay? So this is alpha goes from 1 to k, and I want k to be greater than or equal to 2. Okay? So, you know, so I partition into things that get smaller and smaller because each of them is at least because there are at least two and each is non-empty, so the recursive definition ends at some point. And I take here the collection of all pairs V alpha C alpha, alpha goes from 1 to k, where V alpha is in V, and C alpha is in, well, I could use the configuration space, sort of, I could use the tangent space to V, but the tangent space to V is V itself, so I may as well use V. So it's inside the modified configuration space of A alpha inside V. And I should have said here that the V alphas are different. So alpha different than beta implies V alpha is different than BV beta. And all of this thing I now mod out by translations and dilations. Okay? So, by the way, inside this space, so what is the dimension of this space? Well, it actually doesn't make sense to speak about the dimension of this space because it's still just a union of things. Okay? But let's at least think about it naively and do the following. If the dimension of the vector space is D, well, this space is made out of many, many, many cells, right? So the biggest cell will be when the clusters are all singletons. So what's the dimension of the biggest cell? So the dimension of biggest cell is, so, well, if all the A alphas are singletons, then K is just the number of elements of A. So it's the number of elements of A times, well, each V alpha is in a D-dimensional vector space, so you get times D, but you divide by translation, so you subtract D from the dimension, and then also by dilations, so you also subtract another one, so that's the dimension of the biggest cell here. So what's the moral? Now let's look back, or maybe let's look back here. Okay? So consider the cluster, so consider a situation when you have these few points clustered together. The subset of the compactified configuration space in which these two points, these group of points are clustered together, the subpart, it still doesn't have a structure, but still, the subpart in which this group of points is clustered together has dimension. Well, the dimension of the internal configuration space of the cluster, which I've just computed, which is what you expected it to be, minus d minus 1, plus the actual positioning of the cluster, which is another d dimensions. So overall, the set in which these points are clustered together has dimension, well, the original dimension, minus d minus 1, plus d, so the original dimension minus 1. Okay? So the moral is, each clustering or each grouping of a bunch of points loses one dimension. Okay? So the subset in which the subset of the compactified configuration space in which the points are clustered as shown will be a two-dimensional subset of the overall. Still, it still doesn't make sense as dimensions. What I really mean to say, the number of parameters you need in order to describe this subset is two less than the overall dimension. Okay? Okay.
I have a question about
this. Yeah.
It looks like definition here and the blackboard are different, because here you take just one point on the manifold, and on the blackboard you have k points on the manifold.
What? Where do I take one point on the manifold?
P alpha.
P alpha?
Yes, so this is point.
And what did I do on the handout? Also.
Yes, but here you have several copies, right? From alpha, one to k.
But also in the handout.
Well, it looks to me that you have to choose a point on the manifold where you want to add something else, right? So you choose this point, and this is P alpha.
You mean definition 2?
What definition on the handout are you referring to?
Definition 2, yes.
Definition 2, the first line or the second?
First line.
But it's exactly the same. I don't see the difference.
There's a subscript of, I mean, it's
no, so as it's written here in the handout, it looks like I choose a point on the manifold. And then for this chosen point, I add these additional spaces.
No, but you run over all possible such. So it's not. No. So, Okay, so it's a union over subdivisions into clusters. And for each cluster, mm-hmm. for each. Part of the subdivision, you choose a P alpha.
Yes.
Yes.
But why do you then need these several P alphas for from alpha 1 to k?
Because I may have more than one cluster. Because, you know, this is I've drawn one situation, but I could have points 8, 9 over here, which again form a cluster.
Yes, but that would correspond to another digital. Subset in other A alpha.
Right, so now for each subdivision if of A into A alphas, so in principle it's a subdivision into K pieces, mm-hmm. I choose at least P alpha of K points. Each P alpha is a point in the manifold, so it's where I will put cluster number alpha. Some of the clusters will just be singletons, so it's not interesting. And I also choose an internal structure for each cluster. I think the handout and the blackboard agree, and I think both agree with the intuition. So maybe it's written slightly differently, so maybe you're not parsing the parentheses. So the way it is written in the handout, it's P alpha in M, comma C alpha in some configuration space, but all of this is within parentheses, and then it says alpha runs from 1 to K. So it's a list of P alpha in M, C alpha in the configuration space. So maybe it's notation, but okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, where was I? So now I need to put structure on this space. So far it's just a set of space it's a disjoint union of manifolds, but now I need to make it a single manifold. I need to glue these pieces together. Okay, let me erase, but not erase the picture, and start with a silly definition. So the resulting thing is not quite a manifold or a manifold with boundary, it's a manifold with corners. So what's a manifold with corners? For example, the pentagon. Okay? So definition, and in the smooth world, there is a, the corners have a more meaning. Okay? So definition, a manifold with corners is, well, you know, I could run through the whole definition of a manifold. It takes a whole class in core topology, but you've taken core topology, so I don't need to do it. So it's the same definition as the definition of a manifold, except each point has either a neighborhood that looks like all of R to the D, or like half of R to the D, or like a quarter of R to the D, if the point is at the corner, or, well, so on. So definition, a D-dimensional manifold with corners, so it's not a formal definition, but it's as formal as it will get, is like a D-manifold, except every point, instead of having a neighborhood that looks like R to the D, or in the case of, I mean, I'm assuming that manifolds were with boundary were already done. So, or like one half of R to the D, so R to the D plus, instead of that, it has a neighborhood that looks like R to the D, I think I wrote it K plus, which means the first carry coordinates are positive. So it's the collection of all x's in R to the D such that x1 is greater than or equal to 0 down to xk is greater than or equal to 0. Okay? And of course, that's not the end of the definition. Then you need to say stuff about there are transition functions, and the transition functions are smooth. The usual things you say in the ordinary definition of a manifold, nothing good can be said. Nothing further should be said. Okay? So, theorem.
Sorry, so there's no diffeomorphism between that thing and the one with boundary?
No, I don't think so.
Is that obvious, or?
It might require a proof, but...
Okay, yeah. Never mind.
Okay. So, anyway, so here's the claim, or theorem. Again, it's a misstatement, okay? Let me state it incorrectly, and then... So the statement is that CAM is a D-dimensional manifold with corners. What I really mean to say is that a structure of a D-dimensional manifold with corners can be put on the space in a natural way. Okay? So how do you do that? So, okay, the details are hell on earth. Basically, we need to go through a recursive definition and sort of construct something recursively on top of it. And then whatever you construct, sort of coordinate patches, you have to compare them. So you have to make this comparison in some recursive way. And you know, I don't know a way to do it cleanly. And doing it is much more an exercise in computer programming than in mathematics. And the big problem is that at the end you get a computer program that you cannot run on any real computer. So if there are bugs, like Sasha, you may have identified a bug. I think you didn't, but you know there may be bugs, small bugs in the implementation, and you'll never know. So instead, let me try to give you the intuition. The intuition is that you see a clustering system as written over here corresponds to a codimension, let's see, there are 1, 2, 3, so a codimension 3 corner, where a codimension 0 corner is an internal point, a codimension 1 point is a boundary point, a codimension 2 point is like here, and a codimension 3 point is, well, 3 dimensions down. So any point in the any point that fits this description, meaning that in this sort of recursive construction, lives in the situation where we've taken one cluster to be this and second cluster to be that, and then within the second cluster, further clustering structure. So any point that matches this clustering structure should have a neighborhood that looks like R2, the big dimension, sub plus 3, 3 plus. So three coordinates must be positive. Okay? So the three coordinates correspond to the three kind of clusters. And let's call them alpha 1, alpha 2, and alpha 3. So all of these further variable, oh no, alphas I've used. Well, okay, so I'm using them again. So basically, I should have a map from the configuration of 1, 2, 3, 4 points. So from the configuration of space, the open configuration space of 4 points in the original manifold, cross the configuration, it's again not quite cross, but more or less cross, the configuration space of 2 points in a vector space, tilde, modulus scaling and translations. And it's not quite cross because this vector space depends on the point. It's the tangent to the point here. Cross the open configuration space. Sorry, cross well the open configuration space of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So 5 points in a vector space, and again the vector space depends on the point, but again mod translations and dilations, cross open configuration space, sorry, the end result, the configuration space on 2 points in a vector space. This vector space happens to be the same as that. Cross the set of all points alpha 1, alpha 2, alpha 3, where all three of them are greater than 0, I should have a map from this to the entire thing. Okay? The map is, well, if all alphas are strictly greater than 0, you just place, okay, you start by placing this cluster inside here so that the size is alpha. Sorry, and I may as well assume that all alphas are very, very small. So you place this within it here so that the size is alpha. And then you place this, alpha 3, and then you place this within this so that the size is alpha 3. And then you place this, sorry, alpha 2, and then you place this within here so that the size is alpha 1. And you have to use some map that identifies the tangent space at the point with a small neighborhood of the point in order to do that. And now, if some of the alphas are still 0, then you only do some of the placements and remain with a cluster for those alphas that are still 0.
Sir, what is the target space here?
The full space.
So is it with a tilde or without?
Without a tilde. You're right. Sorry. So it's hell. I think you will agree that it's hell on earth, and that I. But on the other hand, at least intuitively, it makes sense that it can be done. Okay. So I'll. Is it okay if I go 2 more minutes? So I just want to state what the boundary is, because the you know. We still have ways to go, so if you remember from dealing with self-linking, invariance or non-invariance of integrals will depend on understanding the boundary. So I just want to understand the boundary of that manifold. So of that manifold with corners. So the boundary of configuration space of the boundary of this configuration space, meaning the ordinary boundary. So the codimension 1 boundary is, well, it's just when you have one cluster, only a single cluster. So it's the can be written in the following way. It's sorry, I hope not to get it wrong. So it's disjoint. Oh, I think the handout says the boundary of M. I really meant the configuration space of M. So basically, you have to look at all ways of finding a single cluster inside A. The cluster in itself should be of size greater than or equal to 2. Otherwise, it's not a cluster. And then it looks like pairs P, C, where P is an element of the configuration space, the open configuration space of A modulo A prime. So you reduce all of A prime to a single point, and you just look at the open configuration space of that inside M. And C is the internal structure of the A prime cluster. So it's an element of C A prime tilde at the tangent space of, at the point PA prime of M. So at the point P well, P has many coordinates. I want the coordinate that corresponds to the whole cluster, A prime. And that's it. This later will play a prominent role in what we do. Yes?
Does C have to be in the open part of this C tilde?
Does C have to be in the open part? Well, it depends if I want the boundary as a compact thing or as whether I want to include the corners in the boundary or not.
Okay.
So you know what, to be, you're right. I mean, I'm not sure I even define this, but I haven't defined this, but it should be clear what it is. It means open, but still modded out by translations and dilations. Okay.
But what is A/A prime?
A set A with a subset identified to a single point. So I found a few bugs in the handout as I was talking about it. And had I tried to write a complete proof of everything, it would be hell, and there will be more bugs. So I'll fix the bugs, but okay, that's it. Thank you.